3107 State v. Sorensen. Christopher Kelly, representing Mr. Sorensen.
May it please the court, my name is Chris Kelly and I do represent Ronald Sorensen in this matter. Rule 801.16 sub 2 of the Rules of Civil Procedure was adopted to modernize the practice of law. It makes it easy for a lawyer to file documents with a court from a distance by authorizing those courts to accept the filing of the document by facsimile transmission. The rule by its terms is applicable to papers that do not require a filing fee. The question presented in this case, I think, almost answers itself. That question is, if a filing fee need not be paid to file a notice of appeal, is the notice of appeal a paper that does not require a filing fee? We submit that if a notice of appeal doesn't have to have a filing fee before it's filed, it's not a paper that does not require a filing fee and can, therefore, be filed by facsimile transmission. A filing fee is required if payment is made necessary by the law. I don't think it's disputed in this case that Mr. Sorensen didn't have to pay a filing fee to file his notice of appeal. It isn't disputed that he is indigent. It isn't disputed that he is represented pursuant to a public defender appointment. Filing fees are waived in cases where an individual is represented by the public defender. In this case, after the court in Juneau County gave permission to file the notice of appeal by facsimile transmission.
How was that permission given?
Basically by a telephone conference with the court asking if that would be acceptable.
That's not in the record then?
It's in the, there's actually an affidavit that was filed with the Court of Appeals to that effect, and that's referenced in the memorandum that was filed with the Court of Appeals in response to its request for...
Does Juneau County have any trial court rules?
Not that I'm aware of that deal with facsimile transmission filings.
I was going to ask if they have a fax.
They do have a fax machine.
Where is it located?
I haven't been there. I don't know.
Okay.
The facts in this case fit within the plain language of the statute. Sorensen's notice of appeal did not require a filing fee because that fee is waived. He filed it by fax transmission with the court's permission. The Court of Appeals nonetheless raised a jurisdictional question in this case on its own motion, and after briefing, the Court of Appeals concluded that the statute refers to documents generically by the type of document, as opposed to whether the specific document being filed required payment of a filing fee. The Court of Appeals, I think, is rewriting the rule. It is reading the rule as if it says documents that never require a filing fee can be filed by facsimile transmission, or in a wordier way, documents for which a filing fee can be assessed, whether or not a filing fee is required to file the particular document in question, cannot be filed by facsimile transmission. But that's not what the rule says. None of that language appears in the rule.
Let me ask you, as I read 814.29C, we're talking about the waiver.
Right.
The fact that it's automatic is that I'm assuming that it's not automatic, that in some way that the, if I read this correctly, that the court may deny the request when the order of the court finds that the affidavit states no claim, defense, or appeal on which the court may grant relief. So although it may not require a fee, the court could still deny the request. Is that my misstating that or is that correct?
That's what 814.29 says. However, in practice, and I have been handling these for about 20 years, if the notice of appeal is filed with the trial court and the trial court is provided with a copy of the order appointing counsel that is issued by the public defender, which indicates that the public defender has made that indigency determination. That's all that has ever been required, at least in the 20 years I've been practicing, to file a notice of appeal without paying a filing fee. I have never had to ask a judge to make an individualized determination after the public defender makes that determination that the person is indigent. I have never been asked to have a judge actually enter an order waiving the filing fee or allowing the document to be filed without payment of a filing fee, and I have never heard of a case since I've been practicing in which a public defender appointee is required to do that.
Well, so, the reason I ask is I formerly was a trial judge. I recall where it was involving a group of toxicomatados claiming that they were indigent. And after there was that counsel, there was a challenge by, in this case, I believe it was the district attorney's office, to the fact that whether they were or were not actually without funds. That's the only reason I brought this up. So it seemed to me, as I read this, that it was not necessarily automatic because it said statutorily the court may deny the waiver. That's what it says. Whether it's your experience, I'm just saying we're kind of looking not only at this case, but what effect this would have if we were to allow your position. When it just is in the statute, it seems to me that courts still could do that.
Well, I think courts can certainly raise on their own motion if they have reason to question indigency, or a party in the case could raise the question of indigency, and that would be subject to court review. In this case, I think it's undisputed that Sorensen is indigent. That's what the public defender found.
Well,
that's never been questioned.
Let's just suppose, in Justice Wilcox's example, the court later finds that the person's indigent and has to have a filing fee. Is that notice of filing for appeal good, or is it not good? Effective or isn't it effective?
I think the notice of appeal is still good,
okay,
as long as it's timely filed, because the payment of the docketing fee isn't jurisdictional.
So if I were very rich and decided to take an appeal, and I faxed it, and didn't put in a check, and 1 day or 2 days after I faxed timely notice of appeal, I paid my fee. Would I have a would I have a timely appeal?
I doubt it in that fact situation, because then you haven't been determined to have been indigent by the public defender's office.
Well, what difference does it make? Because under Douglas, was it the Douglas v. Dewey case, or one of the cases where the court said, "Hey, the filing of the fee, filing of the notice is the important thing. That starts the appeal time." Well, you've made enough. You've made it within the time.
I think the difference is that under 801.16.2, you would not have been considered to have filed the notice of appeal on the day it was received by facsimile transmission, because in that scenario, you wouldn't be a person who was authorized to use fax transmission to file.
I put it in the mail, and I forget to put it in my check. It arrives timely at the Court of Appeals. Get a call or a note check. I then send in a check. Have I timely filed?
That's the Douglas against Dewey case.
Yeah.
Yes, that is timely filing.
So you're going to say if I don't file a fee with a mailing, that's okay, but if I fax it without a check, it's not okay? I mean,
because everybody is entitled to file by mail. There aren't special rules that tell you you can't file by mail.
Yeah, but what's the purpose of the rule that says that you can't file by fax unless you have a fee? I mean, the whole purpose of the rule must be that the assumption is that if there's a fee, you have to pay it with the filing.
I think
that's not true in notice to appeal.
It's not true, certainly, that because the payment of the docketing fee isn't jurisdictional. On the other hand, I think it's certainly the preference of courts that the filing fee should accompany the document that is being filed. And I think to foster that preference, 801.16.2 only allows people to take advantage of filing by facsimile transmission if this is a case in which they don't have to transmit a filing fee. That just allows the check or the money and the notice of appeal to arrive together in cases where the money has to be paid. At least it encourages people to do that or discourages them from filing in a way that you couldn't transmit the money with the notice of appeal.
Do clerk support take a master charge?
For accepting notices of appeal, I honestly don't know. I've never tried to do it.
Then I could just fax them my number.
Is there a distinction, counsel, between papers that do not require a filing fee and persons who are not required to pay a filing fee?
I don't know what that distinction would be, because a person who isn't required to file or to pay a filing fee is going to be filing papers that don't require a filing fee. I think the two go hand in hand.
Well, why wouldn't the rule then say that persons who aren't required to pay filing fees can file anything they want to by fax?
That would be another way of writing the rule, and
but
I think
that's not the way that it was written. It references the papers generically as opposed to the persons who are doing the filing. And I mean, that's basically your argument. Your client is a person who doesn't have to pay any filing fees by operation of law because the independent fee is waived. And so any paper he chooses to file, therefore, doesn't require a fee and can be filed by fax. But that's not the way the rule is written. It says paper in general that don't require filing fees can be faxed.
Well, it doesn't say papers in general, though.
No, but it uses that term in a generic sort of a sense without the distinction being made between the person who's doing the filing. That's why I asked the question the way that I did.
And my argument is that since Sorensen is a person who doesn't have to file or pay a filing fee, the documents he files do not require a filing fee.
But why would such a two-tier hierarchy then set up in this sort of arcane area of what you can and can't file by fax?
Well, again, if we're talking about other ways the statute could have been written, if the rule were going to be written in a way that would make it apply generically to kinds of documents, as opposed to deciding whether this document requires or doesn't require a filing fee, I think it would be written so that it says documents that never require a filing fee cannot be or can be filed by facsimile transmission. That would be a nice, clear, concise way of making it apply generically to the type of document, as opposed to focusing on whether the particular document requires a filing fee. I don't see language in this rule that says that we're supposed to look at the nature of the document or generically at the title of the document. We're supposed to look at whether the document requires a filing fee.
Specific document by document, filer by filer, case by case basis, and leave it up to the clerk of courts to make those determinations? Do you think that's what you're doing?
Well, exactly, because the clerk of courts always has to make a determination as to whether a filing fee is required for a particular document. In Chief Justice Abrahamson's example, if I sent this notice of appeal without a filing fee and I got there on the last day of the filing period, sent it through the mail, the clerk would still have to decide, does this document require a filing fee or doesn't, and would have to decide how to act. So whether it's done by facsimile transmission or by mail doesn't relieve some court of making a decision as to whether this document requires a filing fee. I think
so.
Yes.
Just as an aside, this case reminds me of one of those pictures where some people look at it and they see the old hag lady, and other people look at it and they see a beautiful person. That depends on the perspective. Or you look up at the railing. Some people look at the railing and they'll see these hourglasses with the sand ticking through, and other people will see a series of footballs.
Or an ugly baby
on a doorstep. So it seems to me that the case hinges on other, that, you know, you keep saying, but
that, well, the language is clear, but so does your opposing counsel. So this case is going to turn on other things other than, I think, than just the language. Now, for instance, your opponent says that one of the advantages for interpreting it the way he wants is that any time a clerk of court receives a notice of filing by fax, they know they can throw it out because it doesn't count. Now, can you answer that? Or can you answer any of the other policy arguments that he makes, and do you have any of your own?
Sure. I think the policy, as I indicated at the beginning of my argument, that underlies this rule is to make it easy for lawyers to take advantage of relatively commonplace 20th century technology, a fax machine.
That was in your argument. That's some lawyers. Other lawyers, I mean, those lawyers that represent a certain clientele will be able to take advantage or use that. Other lawyers cannot. I mean, in the sense, you have a, as Justice Babbage indicated, kind of a two-tier system, then, which we would be establishing if we went and adopted your argument. You'd have differences, right, for one than the other.
Well, there already are differences. Some people have to pay a filing fee to file a notice of appeal. Other people don't. I don't think this rule is creating the difference. I think that the waiver rules create the difference. This rule, 801.16, provides that...
Counsel, could you answer my question, please?
Okay.
How do you answer on that policy argument?
I think... Well, again, I don't think that the policy consideration that's being advanced is consistent with the purpose of the statute. The purpose is to make it easy for us to file documents by facsimile transmission. As I said before, I don't think this imposes any additional burden on the clerk. The clerk always has to decide whether this document should have come with a filing fee or not, whether I take it in my hand delivery, whether I mail it, or whether I send it by fax transmission. Now, the rule does say that if I send it by fax transmission, by doing that, I am certifying that this is a document that can be filed. And I think that certification probably relieves the clerk of any particular burden. But in any event, that's a burden that the clerk already has. The state in its brief objected that the clerk won't know whether to file stamp this document, when it comes in by fax. But the same thing would be true if I sent it by mail and didn't include a check. I don't think that's a policy consideration anyway, because of Douglas against Dewey, which requires the document to be filed stamped by the clerk. But I don't see a distinction between mailing it and faxing it in terms of the state's policy objections.
One of the goals in administration, and this 801 can arguably deal with administration, one of the goals is to keep it simple, uniforming. There's a lot to be said for that. So why don't you just, I mean, you've got the Court of Appeals local rules that says, in this instance, paper requires a filing fee, even if the fee has been waived. Use that as the interpretation. Have uniformity. Don't have this kind of problem.
Well, the obvious problem with that interpretation is that you're then construing the rule in a way that not only subverts its purpose, because we have a case here in which I think I'm entitled to file this by facsimile transmission and to take advantage of the technology that the rule allows me to take advantage of. And if I'm not allowed to do that with any notice of appeal, even if I don't have to pay a filing fee, I'm then not being given the benefit of what this rule was trying to give me. Beyond that, I think the rule as written certainly doesn't clearly say that I can't file it by fax, and it sets a trap for the unwary. And I don't think that the rule should be written or construed in a way that allows that to happen. In fact, if there is ambiguity in this rule, this court recently held in Department of Transportation against Peterson, which is published at 226 West 2nd 623, that procedural statutes are to be liberally construed so as to permit a determination upon the merits of the controversy if such construction is possible. I think that's the way that this rule needs to be construed. There is no harm that I can see by allowing a notice of appeal to be filed by facsimile transmission if it doesn't have to be accompanied by a notice or by a filing fee. I don't see a difference between filing that notice of appeal by facsimile transmission or sending it through the mail without a filing fee.
How would you file if the statute didn't exist?
I'm sorry?
How would you file
either by
the statute didn't exist?
As we did before the statute existed, either by personal delivery or depositing it in the mail or some other courier.
Personal delivery, do you deliver?
Me?
Yeah.
I might have in this case.
I'm sorry.
I might have in this case.
Did someone drive from Madison?
Somebody
to Austin?
Would drive from Madison to Austin, right?
How much time would you require for mailing from Madison to Boston?
I would expect it to get there in a day. Particularly using Federal Express or some company that promises to get it there overnight and usually does. If it didn't, I would probably be checking with the Court of Appeals with the Clerk of Courts the next day, and if it didn't get there, get in the car and drive it up there.
You're an appointed public defender?
Yes.
Would you be compensated for driving up there?
I don't know if I would be or not. I probably wouldn't bill them for it. As I was saying, in summary, there is no harm in construing the statute to mean what I think its plain language says. I don't think it creates any additional burdens for clerks. I don't think it creates a lack of uniformity of the operation of the statute. Conversely, there is a great harm in saying to Mr. Sorensen, this notice of appeal arrived in court on time, but you're out of luck because even though it did not require a filing fee, and the statute says you can file documents by facsimile if they don't require a filing fee, you don't get to proceed with your appeal. I don't think that's consistent with the rules that should allow a liberal construction so that controversies can be determined in court. I don't think it's consistent with the policy or the purpose of the statute, which is to let lawyers take advantage of the technology to make filings by facsimile, and I simply don't see that any bad policy is advanced at all by adopting an interpretation that is consistent with the clear language of the statute. Thank you.
Your position would be the same whether it's a motion and prior costs, right?
Exactly.
We generally don't require costs, right?
Correct.
If you wanted to file a trial, we'd just fax it.
Assuming that it's consistent with the rule to do so, yeah.
Or an affidavit?
Yes.
May it please the court, my name is Warren Weinstein. I'm Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this case. It seems to me that there is a problem and there is a hardship in Mr. Sorensen's interpretation of the rule, and that is that not all appellants are treated the same. Not all appellants are treated the same. If you are an appellant who, because they have sufficient money to pay the $150 filing fee, you can't use a fax to file a notice of appeal. Under Mr. Sorensen's interpretation, because he's entitled to a waiver of the fee, he can. And so clearly, as to a specific document, two similarly situated appellants are treated differently.
By one day.
I'm sorry?
By one day.
Yes, that's true. But that's true for a late arriving notice of appeal, regardless of the means in which it's conveyed. If you mail it and it arrives a day late, the same is true.
Mr. Weinstein, maybe the issue is that that a notice of appeal doesn't require a filing fee, but filing fee with that notice. So the clerks have to accept it anyway. Then if you don't like it, you might move to dismiss that, but then you might fight about the fee, but the notice would be all right. What about on a motion? Do you have similar rules if you file a motion without a filing fee? Does the clerk have to take it?
I'm not aware of a motion that requires a filing.
No costs?
Sorry?
No costs for filing a motion?
Not normally. The only papers, and what the way I read required filing fee means, is there a statute that assesses a filing fee? And as with using that definition, the summons and complaint requires a filing fee, and some other papers that initiate a lawsuit that are not called summons and complaints, for instance, a petition for review and an administrative review, or a notice of appeal.
Those are the only two?
Those are the only two I'm aware of. There may be a few others, but it's certainly not the majority of filings in the circuit court or in the court of appeal.
You're saying that this whole rule, which three reasons that it covers a whole load of things, just covers two things.
Well,
the beginning of a lawsuit and the end of that trial court.
So far as I'm aware, that
get in and get out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I may not have missed one or two papers, but certainly it is the minority of papers that require any kind of filing fee. And again, by required, I mean assessed by a statute.
Well, are there any cases that indicate that if you don't file a fee with the summons and complaint, that that's void?
I'm not aware of any. I don't know of any case law on that. I think that because that initiates the lawsuit, that the clerk would probably reject it without the fee, at least until there was a petition and order waiving fees, and would decline to issue a summons.
Can you finish answering?
Yeah.
I look at 814.29 subsection 1.
Okay.
And this is an argument against your position that I'm going to posit to you. 801.16 says papers that do not require filing fee.
Mm-hmm.
And subsection 1 sub A says, in essence, any person commencing an appeal or may commence an appeal without being required to give a security cost for the. So they use the one, both statutes use the word required, and it seems to me that what subsection 1 given, 814, takes away. Because 814 says you're not required to do so.
Well, I think the difference is that 814.29 says you are not required to pay a filing fee. And if that was the intent of the drafters of the rule, in this case, why didn't they say for papers that do not require payment of a filing fee? I think that's the difference. What's required for 801.16, the fax filing, what's required is whether or not there's a statute that assesses a fee. In 814.29, what is required is the payment, not whether or not a statute assesses something. And that's the difference. And, by the way, regardless of what the practice is, the statute is very clear that it takes an order of the court. The court must base it on a finding. Sub B says the person seeking an order shall file an affidavit briefly demonstrating two things, poverty and the nature of the appeal, defense, or proceeding, cause of action, cause, and the court can deny it if it finds either there isn't poverty or the cause, defense, or appeal is not such that the court could grant relief. So there is some discretion on the part of the courts. Whether or not they exercise it in practice or not, I don't think matters, because this is what the statute requires. And until the court makes those findings and enters the order, the fee is required. So at the time that a person faxes a notice of appeal to the clerk, even though the clerk knows the date upon which it's received, the clerk doesn't know whether it's effective, because under Mr. Sorensen's rule, it's only effective if the order is ever entered.
Well, I agree with you up to a point, counsel, but then I think of the scenario in which the notice is filed by mail or delivered in person, and even though they're not exempt from paying a filing fee, so long as they deliver it by mail in a timely fashion, or so long as they deliver it in person by a timely fashion, if not accompanied by a filing fee, they still get to protect their appeal. And yet, and the court has jurisdiction, and yet you're trying to make a distinction with the facts here. And it doesn't make a whole lot of common sense.
And the only reason is because that's the language that the court used when it adopted the rule. Could it have adopted a rule that said only a summons and complaint may not be filed by fax? Yeah. Would that be a good rule? Probably so. Certainly, it doesn't meet any of the problems that I think Mr. Sorensen's interpretation raises. It would be uniform. All appellants would be able to file a notice of appeal by fax. It would be just as the mailing after doing. But that's not what the rule says. And
what problems does his interpretation raise?
Well, I think it treats appellants differently.
Okay, if I wonder.
Well, it depends on whether you have money or not, whether you can use the fax.
Money can be a lot higher.
That's right. That's right. It creates uncertainty, because I think in most instances there isn't the order entered at the time that the notice is supposed. Last day of the for filing of the appeal. So, yes, it's file stamped, but we don't know until some later date after the trial court makes its determination under 814.29 whether or not that filing is effective. And it doesn't foster the overall requirements of administrative rules for the courts, which is simplicity and uniformity. Now, it is true that, as Mr. Sorensen points out, the clerk knows when they get the fax, the date on which it comes, it should actually usually print it out. So that doesn't create a problem. But the language of that the court adopted when adopting this rule, and if you look in the drafting file, this was based on rules in other states, and they all tend to be fairly similar, I guess. It chose this particular language. It does indicate the surveys that form the basis do indicate that the concern was payment of the fee, and in light of Dewey, that is a little bit inconsistent, but nonetheless, that's the situation.
Would you explain to me again how they're treated differently?
Well, an appellant that's wealthy cannot use the fax to file a notice of appeal under the language of the rule and under Mr. Sorensen's interpretation of that language, under either of our interpretations. Under Mr. Sorensen's interpretation, a person who is indigent and can't afford the fee can file a notice of appeal by fax. So here we have two appellants, both of them on the last day of the time to file a notice of appeal. One can fax, the other cannot. That's the difference. Mr. Sorensen claims that the rule is unambiguous. If that's true, especially after the Pratch decision, it seems to me that any ambiguity was resolved against him, because I don't think you can read the Pratch decision any other way than the way the Court of Appeals read it in this case, which is a paper that requires a filing fee is a way of generically saying there are two or three kinds of papers that we're not going to allow to be filed by fax. And those are the ones that there's a statutory fee required. Whether or not it was a good idea or not to do that, who can say? Would it be terrible if the court now changed the rule so everyone could file by fax? No, I don't think that would be a problem. But that's not the way it reads right now.
Could read that way if we added a couple of words.
That's right.
We do it with statutes to make good sense.
It could be. And of course, this is a court, it's in the statutes, but it's actually a court rule. So the court could change it either by adding certain words or allowing all papers to be filed by fax.
Do you think it's a better rule?
I think it's more convenient for litigants if everyone can file by fax, yeah.
What about those who are not indigent and how they get paid?
Well, if you make it so that everyone can file by fax regardless of whether they're indigent or not, then the matter of payment of fees would be the same as they would in a criminal case, for instance. And this, by the way, doesn't arise in criminal cases, because in criminal cases, the Court of Appeals has authority to extend the time for filing the notice of appeal. In civil cases, they don't. So that's what creates this problem to begin with. If this was a criminal case, I'm sure the Court of Appeals would have just said, we notice this is received a day late, we extend the time to file an additional day, and off we go on the appeal. But because it's a civil case, the law in the state has developed that the Court of Appeals, or nor this court, have the authority to extend the time for filing the notice of appeal, so they couldn't do that. And that would create the problem.
Do you think the better rule is that we allow anybody, indigent or not indigent, to file by fax, give the court jurisdiction, and then for those that must pay the filing fee to simply pay the ordinary postage?
It would be a uniform rule, and it would be more convenient to the litigant. So in that regard, I think yes, that would. And I think Mr. Sorensen is correct, that is why the court adopted the rule. So it would foster that. Now, clerks may not like it, because I'm sure it would, in certain cases, create a problem for collecting fees.
The same
but
issue can arise on a mail filing on fees.
Well, after Dewey, I guess it still does, although I think most people do submit the filing fee with the notice. But they would be able to mail without after Dewey. There's no question of that. So I don't think it creates any greater problem than Dewey does. Well, if the court has no further questions, I recognize that this is a harsh rule. I think Mr. Sorensen, because he has a right to counsel, would still be able to pursue his appeal, or at least file a writ of habeas corpus and attempt to pursue his appeal through an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. So I'm not sure Mr. Sorensen's going to totally lose out on this in this case. And we have to remember that this case goes well beyond just Mr. Sorensen's type of litigant. I mean, we have to recognize that there are indigents that do evictions, there are indigents that do conditions of confinement cases, they do divorces, and all of those types of cases are going to come under any interpretation that the court puts on this. So, and in those cases also, the issue of poverty may be more contentious. As Justice Wilcox pointed out, if you're not represented by the public defender or legal services of some sort, then you certainly do have to set forth financial facts as opposed to just facts that who your lawyer is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Kelly, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I disagree with the state. The problem posed by my interpretation of this rule is that not all appellants are treated the same. The fact that appellants aren't treated the same has nothing to do with 801.16 sub 2. It has to do with whether they're indigent or not. If they're indigent, they don't have to pay a filing fee. If they're not indigent, they do have to pay a filing fee. So sure, appellants aren't treated the same, but that's got nothing to do with the facts filing rule. That different treatment existed before the facts filing rule was ever created. What I don't hear the state telling us is what harm is caused by treating appellants differently for purposes of the facts filing rule. Mr. Sorensen, I think, gets to take advantage of that rule because he didn't have to pay a filing fee. And by the plain terms of the rule, he can file by fax. An appellant who's required a filing fee should be transmitting that filing fee together with a notice of appeal. So it might make sense to tell that person you shouldn't be filing by fax because we don't want to encourage you to file your notice of appeal and pay your fee separately. That should happen together. I don't see what harm at all is caused by reading the rule in the way that I think it is written. What I do see is what everybody, I think, is acknowledging is a harsh result if we read it the way that the state is asking the court to read it. And I don't know why, if there is no harm in reading the rule in a perfectly sensible way, that allows the ends of the rule to be accomplished, it doesn't make sense to read it that way and avoid the harsh result. That's what I would urge this court to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. That completes our oral arguments. Let's weigh in.